Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. Everything from the ethical use of artificial intelligence and cybersecurity and its impacts in these communities to collaborative projects that deserve recognition for their success. The Sounds of Safety podcast is your comprehensive resource for these topics and stories moving forward. Thanks for tuning in and for your support of our collective community. Enjoy today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast presented by the IGIS Institute. On today's episode, we welcome back Larry Zorio, chair of the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group, and introduce the newly appointed Working Group Vice Chair, Major Brendan Hook from Fairfax County Police Department. For the second episode of the Navigating Cybersecurity series, Larry and Major Hook will discuss the first core function of the NIST CSF framework entitled Govern. They will provide a deep dive into the importance for agencies to develop risk management strategies and craft, communicate, and monitor effective policies. Learn about the best practices and how to combat the ongoing barrage of cyber-related issues. Now over to Larry and Major Hook for today's episode.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of IGIS's Cybersecurity Corner. I am your host, Larry Zorio. And with me today, I have another member of the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group on the pod today, Captain Brendan Hook from Fairfax County Police Department. Brendan, it's good to have you on.
Thanks for having me, Larry. Looking forward to our conversation.
Good to see you. Let me just quickly do just a little bit of an intro. So this is the IGIS organization's podcast. We've done a few of these episodes already, but the purpose of Cybersecurity Corner is we, as a collective, the Cybersecurity Working Group for IGIS, really wants different ways of getting information out to the community to help with cybersecurity risk, help you understand new themes, new topics, new policies, procedures, governance, all these different topics. And we're trying to find different ways to connect with our audience. So this podcast is supposed to be more of a bite-sized, approachable podcast where we try to focus on one particular theme. I mentioned the working group, and let me just do a quick intro for me. So Larry Zorio, I am the chair of the working group. Brendan is one of our great members, including being the chair of IGIS. I am also the CISO, or Chief Information Security Officer, for Mark 43, which is a cloud application, a cloud service where we offer CAD, RMS, JMS, a lot of different mobile applications for police, fire, EMT, even education as well. Brendan, why don't you take a quick minute to introduce yourself and then we'll get right into the episode.
Thanks, Larry. I am a sworn police captain with the Fairfax County Police Department in Virginia. We're just outside Washington, D.C. I've been on almost 20 years. I am assigned as the assistant director of our information technology division. We're a rather large agency of about 1,500 sworn officers, and we have complex and very robust IT infrastructure. Some of my previous assignments that relate to IT include as a supervisor of our digital forensics section, and that's really where my strength and expertise lies. Within the IT division, I'm often one of the least intelligent person in the room, which is always a good thing. The people that I work with are really, really brilliant and hardworking. And I kind of help drive some strategy. And quite frankly, I feel the same way on the IGIS Cybersecurity Committee. But I like to focus on where technology meets practical application. And I think that particularly is my interest and my strength.
That's great. And thank you for that introduction. So without further ado, we are going to get into the NIST cybersecurity framework. On our previous episode, we introduced the framework more in a general sense. And the next few episodes, including this one, we're going to focus on one particular section of that framework. And today, we're going to focus on the govern section of the framework. And for those that are familiar with this framework, this is actually new. The govern part of CSF is a new function. It is part of the kind of 2.0 version of CSF that either is out now or will be coming very soon. So we thought it would be good for the audience to explain what this is. So Brendan, I'm going to kind of lead the conversation, but Can you just, maybe for folks who didn't tune into the last episode, can you just give like a 30-second to 1-minute overview on what NIST-CSF is, first off?
So, as you mentioned, it's a National Institute of Standards and Technology and the cybersecurity framework. So it's a high-level objectives, and they have 6 core functions. So govern, identify, protect, detect, respond, and recover. So I guess I would call these kind of like guidelines and best practices that, you know, I look at it through the law enforcement agency lens, that you can use to help improve your strategy and policy. And it gives you some foundation to explain why you do the things that you do from an IT perspective, which is a lot of times a struggle for IT, because outside of IT, people think we just say no because we like saying no, you know, whether it's some feature or some equipment they want. So this kind of can help you have a bit of foundation to stand on when you're talking to leaders in your agency, but it can also give you maybe manageable expectations so that you can manage your risk appropriately.
I love that you said the foundation to stand on, because that to me is so important. I'm sure a lot of our audience is overwhelmed with everything that you need to do within cybersecurity. And having a foundation, having a roadmap, having something that you can go and reference as a guide, knowing what your next step should be, really goes a long way. And that to me is kind of the what the CSF framework does for folks. So we talked about it on the last episode, but if you're looking for guidance, if you're looking for help, CSF, NIST, CSF, Cybersecurity Framework is really a great, great guide for you. All right, so let's now focus on the govern side. And the rest of the episode is probably just going to be focused on that, Brendan. What can you tell me, like, what is the govern part of it? Like, what does that encompass? Like, to the audience, right? Oh, geez, like, this is going to be overwhelming, Brendan. Like, help me, help debunk the fact that I'm going to get overwhelmed with this. What is it? What's the govern side?
So this is something that's very challenging, and it's an area where, quite frankly, I feel that my group, we need to improve on. And the way I think about it is you organize the context, you have a program that includes your mission, your risk, your requirements. It's really about documentation, right? And it's about documenting who's in charge, what the risk tolerance is, who's got what role, responsibilities, and authorities for these functions, and who then can establish, communicate, and enforce the kind of that change process and procedures that can go along with that. And the way I look at this, Larry, is when something does go wrong, and it will, you don't have to create the playbook. It's already, the governance is, listen, this isn't, we're not talking about incident response necessarily, but this is something that maybe incident response would look to go, oh, okay, that person's supposed to do this, or that's this policy or procedure. And that's what I like to think about is, okay, we're assigning responsibility and maybe segregating duties, you know, all the other things that go along with cyber risk management strategies, but it's putting it pen to paper and documenting it. And the key word, as I'm looking at some of the material reviewed, documenting, and it's, that can be tough at times.
Yeah, it can be tough at times. And I'm just going to flat out say it. This is not the sexy part of NIST CSF. It's not, you know, Brendan mentioned that, you know, his organization probably needs to work on this a little better. I think every organization needs to work on this better, because everyone likes the shiny new toy. They like the new software. They like the incident response that they see on television and on movies with hackers trying to get in and you're doing your investigation. That's what people like to focus on. But this is really, you now have your framework and it's like, now what, right? You need to establish some of these things. You need to plan for it. So you have this framework, but it's like when you go shopping for a car, you know, when you go shop for a car, what you want and don't want, you know, what your price range is, you know, that maybe you need four-wheel drive and you shouldn't be looking at that sports car. You know, that maybe you're going to be towing a camper, you know, that you're going to be going to the local hardware store a lot, and maybe you need a truck. So these are things that we do in our daily lives. We understand that we need to plan for things and you need to do the same thing. And governance is a great way to do that, because you don't want to receive a budget from a town or a city or just your boss and you just go blow it on software, on policy procedures, on people. that you think you know what you need and then come to find out you didn't plan correctly and you actually didn't. You didn't need that.
Sorry, Larry.
No, go ahead.
So we're going through an audit from our county auditor, and we have a very good relationship with them. And, you know, their role is always to find areas for improvement, and they're going to find some. And because we're a very well-to-do county, we have a lot of resources, and we have, as an agency IT, I kind of report to county information technology and county InfoSec. The audit has revealed that, like, all these different agencies, the governance structure really needs updating, because as we're going through some of those new shiny toys that we've talked, that you just talked about, oh, I thought you had that. No, we have this, not that. The audit function is really helping drive that, but the governance and specifically the documentation is where we're lacking. And an audit will bring that out. And, you can only get better, right? Like, I'm not going to focus on what was done previously. We just got to continue to get better. And that's something that when you said about the shiny new toys and everyone wanted to buy that, no one wanted to actually put pen to paper. That's where we're struggling specifically.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Like, what is your overall attitude towards having audits done?
I mean, who likes an audit, Larry? I've been through audits through a number. So I mentioned prior experience in digital forensics. So we went through not an IT audit specifically, but more of like a case management audit. And it's not fun when you're going through them, and particularly in IT or some of the criminal investigations, if you're short staffed and you're spending so much time responding to the audit and you just want to do your job, frustration can mount, right? So I'm very lucky there's an auditor that we deal with that is, he's very responsible towards his job and his duties, but he's also understanding that we have other roles, and he's got bosses too. So I guess to quickly answer the question, I don't like going through audits, but I'd rather have an audit find a vulnerability than a person with malicious intent, mm-hmm. right? So when the audit is done, going into an audit, you have to know they're going to find areas for improvement. They just are. So you have to do that thing that's difficult, which is lower your instinct to be defensive. They're going to find things for improvement, but take that audit results and use it strategically. You can use this for, hey, we need to improve here. Here's the liabilities written out for you if we don't. So either we need more people, we need more equipment, or we need to change this practice or policy or all of the above. But use that strategically to get buy-in from leadership. That's really what you can do. So I don't love going through the audit, but when it's over, you can get a really good product. And if you're focused on truly improving the audit, and our auditors, maybe what I'll say is they're very diligent and they will follow up on their recommendations and they expect you to institute them. And, you know, that can be very helpful with convincing agency leadership of this isn't really an option. We have to solve this problem. We have a few ways mm-hmm. we can solve that, but we can't just ignore it.
Yeah. So that dovetails perfectly into the next area that we wanted to cover. So we covered the what. So what is NIST, and then what is the governance side of it? And the next one we wanted to go to is why. So Brendan's touching on a great why, which is the audit side, which, yeah, none of us like it. But my word of advice is become friendly with your auditors as much as you can.
Because, 100%.
Yeah, you can use them, right? It can be this relationship where you have a good working relationship with them and you trust them, and maybe you can point them in a certain direction because you know that there's a weakness. So that's a big why. Some other whys that come to mind, and then I'll go back to you, Brendan, on maybe some other reasons. You kind of high level touched on it, but just governance in general, when you take the time to do a thorough risk assessment, you understand your priorities and you understand the assets that you have in your environment, and you can really lay it all down. You can then come up with a real plan and identify those gaps. And then when you go to your superior or your boss and you say, we need more people or we need more technology, they're going to say, in a polite way, but they're going to say, prove it. Like, where's this coming from? Where's this data? Show me the data. And then you can come to them with this risk assessment. You can come to them with those audit findings, and you can say, here, this is really happening. Here are gaps. Here are deficiencies. We're going to need X dollars spend in these areas. I've touched on it before too. The other big one, and then I'll go to you, Brendan, is I know that when you have a good governance model, you instantly bring credibility to yourself, your department, your organization. You're going to bring credibility to the auditors. The auditors are going to come in and say, all right, show me your plan. Show me your strategy. A lot of people are going to have deer in the headlights. But if you can say, oh, yeah, sure, let me pull it out. And it's a strategy, maybe a 2 to 3 year strategy. It's a risk assessment, like just a big spreadsheet, you know, with different risks you have identified. Here are the assets that we have. Here are some risks we've identified with our vendors. Instant credibility with that auditor. Instant credibility with your superior that you're trying to ask for budget and people for. So while it may not be sexy, if you invest the time and energy into the governance side of it, it's going to really pay off. Why should you care about the governance side, Brendan, other than I know you touched on auditing, which is a big one, but why else should you care?
The auditing, right, is to kind of prevent real world disasters is a way I think about it. But to actually have a cohesive strategy and to have it documented will lead you to success, right? So it reduces that chaos factor. It forces people to dilute their thinking into the written word, which can be very difficult, right? And the goal here is right risk management to have cybersecurity and have this done appropriately. The real world impact of what, you know, law enforcement and public safety deals with failing here, we've seen it, right? And I, you know, we can name some names and give some examples, but the data that we deal with is vital. And losing access to that data can be just critical failures. It could cost lives. Having certain types of data exfiltrated out, again, could cost lives, could lead to significant embarrassment for people, could disrupt investigations, could lead to technicalities in court where people that should go to prison are not. It could deny justice for victims. So, you know, the impact is not being able to govern it. It's just you can't organize. And The alternative, though, is if you do organize, you can have a clearer strategy and you can also articulate your needs better. And what you can do with that framework and with that written strategy is use that to apply for, you know, we mentioned using the audit as a kind of a scare tactic, but once you dilute this all down, there's any number of grants and budgets that, I mean, at some point you can just kind of copy and paste, right? Like, and we've done that, right? Where you can apply to, you know, we have something called Fund 104 in Fairfax County. This is for large enterprise-wide software that, you know, is going to require significant investment and both time, complexity, people. We're able to use that type of language in our applications there. We were able to apply to Department of Justice for a funding for digital evidence management specialists, kind of an emerging field, to help us organize our data because we have the governance program, the governance function here has informed our policies and procedures, right? So we have all these things written down, and we had to kind of a quick deadline on a DOJ, NIJ funding grant, about over $1 million, Larry. And Now I have many people helping organize the massive flow of videos. I think it's over 4,000 videos a day that we bring in. Obviously, we've automated as much through software as we can, but we're now layering on other types of digital evidence, digital forensic evidence, video from non-body camera and car video. So again, it's going to force you to think strategically, and it's going to force you to dilute your strategy to the written word. And I don't ever think that's a bad thing. And it's also going to force you to identify your potential areas of weakness. So that's never a bad thing.
No, Brendan, it's a great point. Congratulations on getting that grant. First off, that's amazing. That's huge feather in your cap and your department's cap. All right. Well, let's get to the how then. How should people start doing this, right? So we told them the what, we told them the why they should do it. And now some of our audience wants to actually get started. Where would you start?
You need to identify the stakeholders, right? So like for governance, we have some of our programs internally have really good governance structures. So an example of this would be our computer automated dispatch system, because this might be unique to us, our dispatch public safety communication center is their own department. They're independent of the police and fire department. Okay. So they own. So the question how is who owns what we're worried about? So you have to have that baseline, right? Like what systems, what processes are going to, do we need to govern, right? So I'm giving CAD as an example. So DPSC, which is the Department of Public Safety and Communications, they own that. There's a lot of stakeholders, fire department, the police department, the sheriff's office. So how? What rules do we want to organize under? Who gets to make what decisions? What is the applicable laws and policies, right? So for CAD, it's a VSIN, which is the Virginia Criminal Information Network, NCIC, and CGIS, right? So, okay, so these are the types of things, how, okay, what compliance considerations are there? Okay, and then what functionality is there? Who are our stakeholders? And really at a very high level politically, the conversation needs to kind of go, okay, who do we want driving this ship? Who owns it? And then how much power should we give the stakeholders? And so we have this agreement about who can veto what, who can choose what system, who is responsible for doing what. And that's how it's organized at the very high level. And then, okay, so where do these positions live? Which agency? And who can set the policy? Who's responsible? So then all of a sudden we're adding in County Department of Information Technology. We're adding in InfoSec. And we're constantly updating because, as you know, we've mentioned in some other meetings, the CGIS policies have recently updated and they're quite significant, the changes. So as a group, we have to kind of analyze this and look at our different areas of responsibility and impact. So one of the new requirements is multi-factor authentication. Mm-hmm. The governance structure set how we were going to implement that. And we set a baseline of what solution we're going to go with for that. But then the configuration, we learned, well, the fire department uses it very differently than the police department, and the sheriff's office uses it even more differently. So that gets to kind of something that's maybe not written, but we have trust and we have a shared mission, right? So what's our mission? To serve public safety. And we have expectations and requirements. So that kind of first what to do is we organize, what's our mission, what are our expectations and requirements, and then from there, it kind of flows down. And the way functionally that goes is there's testing, there's feedback, there's meetings. And we've met this multi-factor authentication requirement. I think we're going to hit it 6 months ahead of where, I think October is when it's required to be there. And we're going to be done mid-March. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. But we've had to do significant testing and that back and forth and understanding that different people that fall under this governance structure have different requirements and different responsibilities. Mm-hmm. And the way the fire department handles things, for instance, they kind of log on to CAD and they're just on 24/7. That's not how the police department functions, right? We have different shifts. They come in, they're on, they're off. We share cars. So we need a different strategy there.
Yeah, different strategy, different requirements, right? You have totally different requirements than the fire department.
Yep. Yeah.
All right. So first off, again, congrats on the MFA project. I know that a lot of our audience is struggling with rolling out MFA. So we are definitely going to have you back on to do a dedicated episode on MFA, multi-factor authentication.
It's the biggest struggle is the end user, convincing them that we're not spying on their phone. You know, guys, this is meant to keep you safe, not the alternative.
Yes,
please. All right.
So we'll do the audience. We promise we'll do a dedicated one on MFA. So let me just recap a little bit of what Brendan said, and then add a bit more color with some ideas that I had too. Don't overcomplicate this. Do not overcomplicate this, because if you do, you will knock it off the ground. I would say keep it as simple as grab a spreadsheet with different tabs.
Yep.
One of your tabs is going to be naming who's responsible in your agency for running this. I would say maybe it's someone who already does CGIS compliance. Maybe it's someone who does NIBRS. That might be a good person. Or maybe it's someone like Brendan. Maybe it's an IT staff leader, or if you are lucky enough to have security resources, maybe someone in that department. So start there. Identify who's going to be responsible for it. And then start writing down, to Brendan's point, write down your requirements that you have in your agency that might be different than other agencies. So just start jotting them down, right? People work from this time to this time. They need mobile devices. They need laptops. They also need desktops. they need to always be on and always be running, especially if it's the CAD, if it's dispatch, right? They always need to be up and running. So start thinking about those requirements, right? Think about the example I gave with buying a car. When you're buying a car, you have requirements. So just start writing those down. Then Brendan mentioned stakeholders, other stakeholders, right? Who are you going to need to, one, sign off on this plan? Who are you going to need to even just be supportive of it? So it's, you don't want to write this thing in a bubble. So you want stakeholders, people from around different departments to get involved as well. So you want to bring some people in. So jot those down. And then Brendan also touched on it. Write down your compliance and regulatory requirements that you also need to meet. Many of you are going to need to meet CGIS. Many of you are going to need to meet NIBRS. Many of you are going to need to meet even your state privacy laws. Those are just a few that come to mind. You might already have grants in place, and those grants require you to meet certain standards. So again, you want to write those down. That's going to start to give you a good picture of, this is what we are up against in our agency. These are some of the risks we see. And now we can start putting policies in place. We can start putting audits in place. Maybe you want to audit yourself once or twice a year. You can start writing down, documenting roles and responsibilities for different people in the organization. Now, I say a spreadsheet. This is going to be a big spreadsheet, but it's different tabs. It keeps it organized. But if you want, do it in a Word doc, whatever you feel. And that gets me to kind of the last couple points that I wanted to make before I bring it back to Brendan for closing. There are a lot of good resources out there for you that you don't have to start from scratch. Part of governance, for instance, is policies and procedures. Go to the SANS website. SANS, S-A-N-S. That is a really great website that has lots and lots of policy templates. Don't start from scratch writing your policies. Go and find different templates. The NIST CSF website also has really good resources on there. They have some policies. They have spreadsheets. They have just different metrics that you can use. There's even something called the National Cybersecurity Review. And what that is, it's this website that you can go on and you can actually go through step by step the process. It kind of guides you through it. So needless to say, there are a lot of resources out there that you do not have to start from scratch. Brendan, are there any resources that I didn't think of that maybe you can think of that we should tell the audience about?
Yeah, Larry. So I want to also just reiterate that the template is the way to go. We're currently the auditor. Again, governance is where we need to improve on a few of our applications and a few of our systems. So we're working with our auditor and our county InfoSec to come up with a template so we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. And some of those resources you mentioned are ones we've looked at. What I would also say is I think for law enforcement, the International Association of Chiefs of Police has a lot of template policies and procedures that maybe don't line up exactly with NIST, but could be very helpful. I'm on the IACP Cybercrime and Digital Evidence Committee. I know we're always looking to put out cybersecurity tips and kind of model policies. And all I'm going to say about that is that I think there's going to become a time the way we treat digital evidence is going to require conformance with some of these NIST type standards. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably see some of these accreditation agencies start to look towards NIST and others for things that when they look at a law enforcement agency for how they handle digital evidence or sensitive data, this is going to be that foundation that I was talking about.
Okay, great. All right, that is excellent. We're right up against it. I wanted to thank Brendan Hook, Captain Brendan Hook, for joining us today. We covered a lot today, and I think we've already uncovered additional content, additional resources that the IGIS Cybersecurity Working Group can put out for the audience. So please be on the lookout. We'll be putting more of these podcasts out. We are also starting to publish these two-page documents that are very easy and approachable. One side is for the executive command staff. The other side is for the IT security compliance professional. Easy-to-read documents. Look for those. They're coming soon. And until next time, bye, everybody. Thanks again, Brendan.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X, and don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.